I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, so Chris, you ready for the next step in AI's global takeover?
It seems like we're halfway there, but I guess it depends what that next step is.
Well, how about voices that sound exactly like actors, or sports announcers, or even me?
Why did it take this long? I assume this was going to happen much earlier.
We've been working our way to this point for some time now, and in May, OpenAI launched a voice assistant that sounded very similar to Scarlett Johansson, who of course starred in the movie Her, in which she played sort of a futuristic version of Siri. She said she was, quote, shocked and angered when she heard the voice. But let's backtrack a second, Mike. I think I just heard you say, even you.
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. And we're going to hear the AI version of Mike Rogers coming up later in this episode. It is terrifying, believe me.
I'm excited to see if I can tell the difference.
I'm the real Mike Rogers, as far as I know. That's one of our producers, maybe, Chris Blake, and this is Something Offbeat. This week I spoke with David Gunkel. He's a professor of media studies at Northern Illinois University and the author of the book The Machine Question, Critical Perspectives on AI, Robots, and Ethics.
If you're going to have an AI talk to you, we want it to sound like science fiction, since that's what we're familiar with. And she complained that they had used her voice. They retorted, no, we didn't use your voice. It's a sound alike. But it does, I think, open a lot of questions about how we have any control at all over our own voice, who can use it, who can appropriate it, and the ways in which it can be manipulated.
Did the fake Scarlett Johansson identify itself as Scarlett Johansson?
It did not. No, it was just a vocal quality that sounded very similar to the way Scarlett Johansson sounded in the film Her.
So when they say, well, it's not you, technically, they're right.
So technically, it's a little complicated on the legal terrain here, because soundalikes, especially from public persona, like a person who is an actress like Scarlett Johansson, these things have been around for a while. Several years ago, back in the 20th century, there was a famous Ford ad in which they had a song performed by a soundalike of Bette Midler, and she sued them, and she actually won because it sounded too close to her voice. And the argument was that people would mistake the song as being performed by her, even though it was performed by someone impersonating her.
Is that the only rule in place, though?
It's not the only rule in place. The problem here is that there is no federal law that covers this area of evolving challenges to identity and authenticity and voice. Many states do have a right to publicity that can be exercised. This is why Scarlett Johansson has filed her lawsuit in California, which does have a right to publicity law. But there is no way to copyright a voice. And there is no federal statute that covers the right to publicity. So it's a real patchwork, depending on where you go throughout the United States with regards to how this is protected.
Mike, this isn't that far off subject matter-wise from an interview I did about technology and law enforcement last winter. The person I talked to, Savannah Kumar with the ACLU of Texas, said it's often difficult for lawmakers to keep up with tech.
It can be hard for legislatures to stay ahead of trends in technology in general. And that's an area of the law where we see that the law itself is often well behind how quickly technology is spreading. But, you know, it can be so important to just have those basic requirements enshrined. I mean, of course, again, the Constitution provides us with some of these guarantees, but really having that spelled out more concretely in terms of limitations, for example, on how technologies can be used. And as I mentioned earlier, having policies in place for retention, limiting how long information is held once it's captured and how it's shared, et cetera. But the first place to start with that is a limitation on the expansion of surveillance technologies.
I think the problem is, as you mentioned, it's just so hard to keep up. The advances are taking place so fast, so rapidly. It changes from day to day almost.
And I suppose adding to the confusion is, you know, on one hand, you've got the voice itself, but on the other hand, you've got the content. That really opens up a can of worms.
It does. So the voice is one item. The content that is utilized, that is spoken by that voice, would be a whole nother matter. There could be a copyright that applies to that if it is a piece of text written by someone else. So there's a bit of a legal minefield here that you have to negotiate.
So the rules that are in place to protect people whose voices are being imitated, are there similar rules in place to protect the creators of the content?
Yeah, creators of content, writers, filmmakers, photographers, et cetera, are all covered by copyright. Copyright does cover their product because it is a tangible property. It is either a document or a recording, and that can be protected with existing copyright statutes. The voice, however, is not something that is fixed in a tangible form. And as a result, voice per se cannot be copyrighted. The only protection that exists for a voice is the right to publicity. That right doesn't necessarily belong to you and I, but mostly to public figures, well-known celebrities, politicians, other people like that. And again, that law is sort of a patchwork because it's a state law and not a federal law.
There's a lot of concern about AI and the impact that it could possibly have on the 2024 election. In fact, we did a story this morning. The feds yesterday shut down a Russian bot farm, I guess is what they called it, that was involved in that exactly, spreading misinformation through deepfakes, through AI. Is that a concern with the election coming up?
Yeah, it should be a concern. If it isn't already, we should really open our eyes and begin to recognize the way in which either side in this contest is going to be able to mobilize AI to create content and put it on social media or elsewhere that could affect voters one way or the other. I think a really good example of this is the deepfake phone call, the robocall, where they used the deepfake of Biden's voice to tell voters in New Hampshire to stay home and don't go and vote in the primary. That was one instance of this, but I think as we get into the general election, you're going to see a lot more of these, not only using voice, but also using video and images.
That deepfake story you mentioned happened last week. The DOJ says it disrupted a Russian propaganda campaign that used fake AI-powered social media accounts to spread disinformation. DOJ says the bot farm and the AI software behind it were organized by someone at RT, the Russian state-owned media outlet.
Well, of course, it's the Russians. And the story Gunkel brought up, it took place during the primaries earlier this year. Charges were actually filed a couple of months ago. And a political consultant behind the scheme is facing a $6 million fine and more than two dozen criminal charges. The FCC says the fine is the first one involving generative AI technology.
And my boss, he brought me in, it was 4 or 5 months ago, and said, so we took, you know, we got like 3 or 4 hours of you on the air, and we had AI recreate your voice. Then we fed scripts in and he played it. And it was his newscast of me. It was me doing the news, but it wasn't me. But it sounded just, I mean, I could tell, you know, there were one or two little hints, but I'm thinking, you know, in 3 or 4 years, you won't be able, no one will be able to tell. It's getting pretty scary, isn't it?
So you can tell because you know your vocal qualities and your ways of speaking, but most audience members would probably not detect the difference and would take the AI-generated newscast as actually you presenting the news.
It's kind of scary.
It's both scary and at the same time rather interesting because it opens up all kinds of big questions about our notions of authenticity, about voice, about you know, how we connect identity to our voice, who owns the voice, who can manipulate it, etc. So it is not only scary, but it also, I think, raises a lot of ethical and legal questions that I don't know that we're prepared to actually respond to just yet.
So, Mike, when I heard you tell that story to Gunkel, I reached out to our boss to see if he'd let us listen to some of AIU on this episode.
It's funny. He called me into his office a few months ago, and it is kind of scary and very similar.
Good morning. 68 degrees still at 6:03, and the news continues this Wednesday morning here on KRLD. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mike Rogers. Along with our chief meteorologist, Dan Brunoff, he'll be in with a forecast coming up. But first, in Austin, lawmakers have taken to social media now. They've come out swinging during a special legislative session aimed at cutting property taxes for Texans.
And that's so what are some of the things that stood out to you that differentiated it from the real you?
There's just little things in the pacing, the pronunciation, some of the pauses between words. I mean, I could tell. But honestly, if you're talking about a listener, you know, they've got the radio on in the car, could they tell? And the thing is, it's probably only going to be a couple, 3 years before they work out the kinks, and you won't be able to tell. I won't be able to tell.
I listened to you for at least an hour every morning. There were a couple things that sounded different, but if I didn't know ahead of time that I was listening to AI, I don't know that I could have told the difference, because it nailed a lot of things, like at the top of the hour, your intro out of CBS News and the inflection you used introducing a story about the Texas legislature. Very similar.
You think I can get royalties for it when the time comes to hang it up?
That's above my pay grade, but it does remind me about this story I saw recently about the Olympics. NBC is going to use Al Michaels' voice to narrate highlights for a daily Olympics recap on Peacock.
Listen, if he's getting paid for it, that's a pretty good gig.
Hey, with new technology, we might not need any new announcers. We'll have you and Al Michaels for the next century.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You wrote a book about this, gosh, 12 years ago. Is it fair to say that you saw this coming, or am I giving you too much credit?
So I didn't see, I think, the specificity of what we're talking about now with deepfake voice emulators, but the legal and moral challenges of AI, I did foresee 12, 14 years ago, because I saw that AI was going to not only be able to do sort of mathematical processing and these other kinds of sort of cognitive capabilities, but could be utilized to create communication content, whether it be film, video, images, audio, and that was going to open up a whole range of new sets of questions with regards to how we think about who owns the title to these kinds of pieces of content.
I assume you've seen The Terminator. At what point are the machines going to become self-aware?
Yeah, so I think this is probably a red herring, kind of a science fiction scenario that we're very excited about and that is often brought up by people in the tech industry as something, you know, we should be worried about. I think if you look at the AIs that we are creating right now, there is no self-awareness on the horizon. There is no consciousness on the horizon. They are just getting good at doing things in very narrow ranges of opportunity. In other words, they can write text if you're a large language model. They can create new works of art or photographs, like if it's DALL-E or Midjourney, or they can create deepfake voice, as the case with the Sky program that was put together by OpenAI. These things do these operations by manipulating content in a very statistical-based way, by either rearranging words in a way that is statistically probable. They don't understand what they're doing. They don't understand the words they're using. And as a result, I think it's not really human level intelligence that we're sort of creating here. It's a kind of alien intelligence that's unlike us. And that, I think, is much more interesting.
What about consumers? Do consumers care if this is coming from a real human or a machine? I guess if they don't know, it probably doesn't matter.
This is a good question. I don't know that we have the answer to this just yet. I think this is something social scientists are going to have to really do some data collection on to see what people think about and what they prefer. My guess is, and I think this is the bet that is being made by a lot of the commercial actors in this field, is that if you could get an audiobook that is read not by some unknown person, but read by a famous celebrity, like if Humphrey Bogart could read to you from The Great Gatsby, that might be a very enticing way of engaging this kind of content. So if we are able to license the voice of celebrities for various purposes, like the reading of audiobooks or the creating of video content, etc., I think you can see that there's ways in which we could mobilize this vast library of recordings that we have at our disposal to create voices that we want to hear, and that would make various forms of content that much more accessible to a lot of consumers. But whether or not consumers really care one way or the other, I think is a question that is right now an unknown, and will be something that in the next several years will be decided based on how we respond to the various implementations.
Well, it's already like the wild, wild west out there, isn't it?
It is.
And we've just scratched the surface. Listen, Dr. Gunkel, I appreciate you being with us. Thanks so much. And I use the Huskies, by the way, right?
That is correct.
Go Huskies.
I'm Mike Rogers. No, really, I am. And thanks for listening to Something Offbeat. This episode written and produced by Lauren Berry and Chris Blake, with audio editing by Chris Blake and original music by Myron Kaplan. Now, to keep listening, please subscribe to us on the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have your own offbeat story that you think we should cover, please send it to us at somethingoffbeat@Odyssey. It's AudacyY.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.